Thank you for joining us today on Global Heart to Heart Radio. This is Mary Alice, and today we hear part two of my interview with my dear and longtime teacher, Peggy Rubin. Peggy is the founding director of the Center for Sacred Theater in Ashland, Oregon. Today, Peggy will tell us about her award-winning book, To Be and How to Be, a learning manual for thinking in new ways and on many different levels. We will hear about the nine powers that lead us along a fresh pathway to understanding, and one of those powers is a soul message. And our path to growth is in making friends with and honoring that power. So now please join me along with Peggy Rubin as we discover how to celebrate life as a sacred play. So I know that your book, To Be and How to Be, is transforming your life through sacred theater, and that you developed sacred theater long before you wrote your book. But your book, How to Live Life as Sacred Theater, is a great philosophy. And I wonder if you could tell us, I don't know, if you want to start with sacred theater and how that came about, and then how it led to your book and more of what your book is about, which has excellent exercises. I would recommend Peggy's book to anyone, but then I don't have to, because some of the greatest minds of time have praised Peggy's book, To Be and How to Be.
Well, I was always a lover of the theater from the time I was a tiny child. And I've been working off and on in theater most of my life, or a good part of my life. And I love to tell this story. And when I first went to work with Jean, she finally decided that I could work with her after I showed up at I don't know how many of her seminars. She got tired of seeing me there, and she said, okay, you want to come to work, more or less. But the first thing she said, she called me once. I was still working at the festival, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival here. She called me and said, okay, there is a conference in the Netherlands on sacred matter, and I have signed you up for an hour-long conversation on sacred theater. So that's Jean, you know, giving you an assignment that's impossible to fulfill, but nonetheless. And as I tell the story, so I went back to look at the way the powers of the theater itself, the secular theater, and then realizing that all theater comes from the sacred anyway. I mean, it was always an enactment at a sacred festival since we came out of the caves or left the camping grounds when we were telling stories about how we stole the honey from the bear and things like that, and beginning to enact them, and how much more power it had when somebody jumped up and began to enact the bear. And suddenly people would come to life again. So that's what theater does. If you're sitting in a theater as an audience member, have the great privilege of doing that, there's a life on the stage. Somebody is alive on the stage and is doing something that calls your attention, calls your whole being into awareness, if they're doing their job. I went and looked at all the powers of the sacred theater, and then I looked of theater, and then I looked at them from the point of view of your life as a great play. So that's where it all began. And I, as you've heard the story and I tell, I did this beautiful hour-long presentation. We did scenes. We did all kinds of things with these. I think at that time there were eight powers. I always go for nine, so I always add another one. And this beautiful woman from Belgium came up to me afterwards and said, I enjoyed your talk very much, but I did not understand a word of it. Oh, there's work to be done here. So for the next bunch of years, I did everything I could to be clear about how we are born to do something. And some of it is about being that something. We work at doing what we're here to do, to love and to laugh, as you say, until we have become love and laughter. That's our great work in our lives, is to become what we were here to do. So that's the power of incarnating, okay? And then we just ask the questions. What is it? Who is it? It's you. You're here to enact on the great stage of life what it is that you have been given to do. And eventually you will do it so skillfully that you will become that. So you have incarnated the quality of what you are here to do completely. And you walk around as a living, radio station, beaming what you are to the world, blessing it and calming it and sweetening the neighborhood. That's that piece. Mm-hmm. And then we go on to the story you're here to enact. Of the many stories that are available, what are the ones you have played? What are the ones you're now playing? So you pay attention to that. We pay attention to the great stage. Where is it? What is the great stage? Right. Where is your stage? Mm-hmm. What is your stage? What are the beauties of it? Yes, you're...
All the world is my stage.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. And we want to pay attention because you care for the stage. You know, you care for the stage. With attention and making sure that you brought all the elements onto your stage, your personal stage, that keep you fed in your great path of becoming. And then the realization that it's all happening now. The theater can take an event that's 5,000 years old and put it on the stage, and it's now. So everything is really in that huge power of now. Mm-hmm. And so it's who, what, when, where, and how. And the how is through the power of expression, mm-hmm. how we express through our faces, our bodies, our voices, what it is we're here to be and do. Mm-hmm. And the one that's really important, and it's an interesting, I call it the point of view. And it's what we're raised with. Mm. And how in the course of our lives, the things, it's deeper than opinions or judgments. Mm-hmm. It's a real way of looking at the world. And how, as sacred players, we are here to utilize that point of view in a way that is meaningful and gives meaning to the world around you. And in the course of a lifetime, we change. We change. And yes. That point of view, if we're lucky, widens.
Hopefully,
exactly. It widens and you become aware of others' points of view in a way that allows you to shift. And then the big piece in the how we do it is about conflict. It's about making friends with conflict, because you have a very boring play if you don't have any conflict. And the essential thing that conflict asks us to do is to grow. I mean, point of view, when we shift it and widen it, we change. Yes. Things change around us. But if we're going to really become what we were born to become, we're going to have to grow into it, because it takes some energy and some time and some experience. And conflict will bring us there quicker than anything. And it'll give us a lot of fun and a lot of challenge and a lot of... the opportunities for growth are endless with conflict. So we need to all really make friends with conflict and pay attention to it as a soul message, S-O-U-L, a message from your soul saying something needs to grow.
How is that? How is it that the conflict does that? Because so many people our world is constantly in conflict, and we have internal conflict all the time. And usually you might have conflict with your partner, your spouse, a friend that doesn't seem to be fun.
it may not be fun.
Right.
It may not be fun.
How is it that conflict will bring us into a greater sense of being, a better place in our lives?
Well, one way would be the point of view as well, if you look at it. Okay. One would be to widen your point of view on how you look, and look at it as an essential piece of the play. Mm-hmm. Essential piece of the play. And so the first thing is to acknowledge, okay, this has arisen for a reason. And I'm gonna make the assumption, and I will see how it plays, that my soul has given me this because there is something that needs to grow. Now, interestingly enough, sometimes, especially for women, what needs to grow is a sense of self, mm-hmm. and a sense of I have a right, mm-hmm. and the capacity, I'm saying no. That's what needs to grow.
Right.
The willingness to say no, then you can negotiate what the no means. And I mean N-O, not K-N-O-W.
Yes.
K-N-O-W is a different no, but that is there too. But some of it, many of us are particularly in my experience of women, we rely on other people to tell us who we are. Mm-hmm. Instead of finding somehow that through line, that centerpiece that holds us. And sometimes conflict will arise because what that person just told me I was is not what I am. Or what that person is relying on me to be is not who I am.
Yes.
So you become aware of that. And the important thing is to know that when it rises, you're on holy ground. Mm-hmm. You're on holy ground.
Yes.
It's not. And I also always say that if violence rises, any form of violence that rises out of conflict is because the power of conflict has not been addressed. Mm. In other words, I think there's a wonderful, where was this guy? I doubt I can come his name. I think he's probably in the book. But talking about a fifth way of being past postmodern, and looking at an age-old conflict, for example, we could talk about Ireland, and the what's way down under that is that these are one people, mm-hmm. and other impositions and other incursions have caused them to forget that. Mm. And if we could just sink into what is being asked here, and everybody on both sides of any conflict could deeply ask, how do we resolve this without damaging ourselves and each other? Right. Because violence damages everybody.
And everything.
Everybody.
Yes.
But there is a huge creative power in authentic looking at where's the growth that is being required of me and my people that will make sure no damage is done. Mm. So it's gigantic. And of course, in the great tragedies, the conflict is within the character, the great character.
Yes.
That plays the hero, the fault, the hero with a big fault, usually a big flaw. And it is our privilege as an audience member of that to watch that character grow somehow and to grow ourselves while we watch it.
The flaw in the hero is always there, isn't it? I mean,
I dare say it's in all of us, wouldn't you think?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, I've had that struggle in my life as well. My own flaw.
Sure. Yeah,
or flaws. Notice I only have one.
Well, that's all right.
Well, but there's been conflict within myself because of it.
Sure.
Because I see myself and I am seen as one, you know, very happy, cheerful kind of person, pretty bright. And yet I have this side of me. And it has always been a struggle for me, that flaw, and has created a lot of conflict for me in my life because of it, not only internally, but externally with others. I think I have become a better person mm-hmm. in the long run, but the flaw remains.
Funny
this
how
is
they,
the part.
They do remain. But my guess is that you have grown, if nothing else, in awareness, you know.
Oh, yes.
So an awareness of how other people see and expect and all of that. So any kind of growth in awareness is a good thing, I think. And sometimes, you know, you have to declare a truce and say, hello there, flaw.
Yeah. Well, it has helped me to say I reach a place in my life. This is, and this is part of the wholeness of who I am.
Right.
As much as I would like to not have these flaws and to only have this great beautiful part of me exist, that I have reached a point many years ago where I just came to a place of acceptance. That doesn't mean that I can allow those flaws to rear their ugly heads whenever they want, because that awareness, you know, from that having happened before, and my having gained awareness because of it, I can have I can control that differently.
But and respond differently.
Respond differently. But I know that I've had to come to a place of acceptance, because without that, I don't think I would have been able to really grow in myself much more, you know, or expand who I am, or even become more confident in who I am.
And well, and have some compassion for yourself.
That's been the big lesson.
Well, it's a big lesson for everybody. Yeah. Yeah. But compassion for self is one of the things that would come out of, and in the traditional literature, we call it the fatal flaw. But our flaws are who we are in many ways. Mm-hmm. They're just some of the faces of who we are. And awareness of them is a beautiful thing, because so you can choose when it comes up. You can choose how to respond.
Yes.
But it's not to do away with them. It's to allow yourself to play with them more.
Well, it took me a lot of years.
Tell me.
To figure out it was not to do away with them.
Tell me how many years. But, you know, if there's still work to be done, that's how you know. If you're still here, there's still work to be done. And joyful work it is, too, you know, so.
In the long run, yes.
In the very long run.
In the immediate moment, not always, but in the long run. In the long run.
So just to finish about the powers of sacred theater. So there's a who, what, when, where, how, and then the big why is you do it for the sacred audience.
Yes.
And you perform this great play with celebration. That's what you're here to do. We're here to celebrate life in every possible way. Every moment of aliveness is worthy of celebration. So that's what life as a sacred play is about. No.
And that's what makes it sacred, I believe.
Good point. Beautiful point. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that you preface it as sacred. Because it is, and I have a sense that if more people were to appreciate the sacredness of our life and how we are living it as a play, and how the choices that we make and how we present, if we could get the world to see how sacred it is, on a level beyond, I mean, every moment, every day, every encounter, is sacred and holy. I'm an optimist. I think that the more people that get this, and the more we share that with the world, that it will help to raise the vibration and the frequency of the consciousness of our planet, which we much greatly need.
Yeah.
So this book has, and your approach to how we live our life in such a sacred way and how we should look at it, has been a great contribution to us here on this planet. And I know that you've received several awards for this book.
Kindly enough, yeah.
Yeah, the 2 Nautilus Silver Seal Awards for writing and creative process, and then for personal growth and self-help and psychology, which this book is all of it. This book is everything.
Thank you, Mary Alice.
Well,
thank you.
It is, and you have accolades from many people about your book, which we can go on. I personally have used your book in many ways to help me in all of it, and the chapter on conflict has been invaluable. It really has. Thank you, Peggy.
You're so welcome. I'm glad it's useful.
Oh, it's doing a lot of good in the world.
It did indeed.
So I am curious about the book that you're writing now.
Well, that's the book on joy.
The book on joy. Mm-hmm. And you're there. You're almost ready to have that out to us so that
I was just looking at the need for rewriting. So that's, but I am determined that I will have my piece of it done by the by November, as much as I can do. I've got a wonderful editor, the woman who edited To Be and How to Be is mm-hmm. helping me with this one. So I don't even know who, if anybody, will publish it. But it is a life work for me. It is the way I do my best to fulfill what I feel like I'm here to do. So it's just one way of fulfilling it, and it's an traditional way of fulfilling it, in a way, to write a book about it. But the interesting thing is that it keeps shifting, and joy keeps revealing itself to me in so many different ways.
Wow.
And so many avenues, so that it joy itself is not elusive, but writing about it is elusive. I need lots of stories, and I've got, you know, substantial stories, and to hold them within the sense of the laughing creator is just a puzzle and a delight, and slow. Very slow. But one of the things that I've been saying over and over and over recently is that what we mainly need to do to appreciate both the sacrality of life and the joy of life is to slow down.
Yes.
To take the moments more gracefully.
Be in the now.
Be kinder to time and treasure it
mm-hmm.
In a meaningful way. It feels good.
That brings me to a place. I was driving up on the Olympic Peninsula one day, and I'm flying down the road, and I went, why am I rushed? Where am I going? The landscape was so magnificent and so beautiful, and it was a sunny, beautiful, this was in the mid-90s, and it just, in that moment, struck me, where was I rushing off to? And why wasn't I just being present with what was right in front of me in that moment? And it shifted everything for me, I think, for the rest of my life.
Beautiful.
In just helping me to recognize that each now moment holds such beauty. Every moment, if we are stay right here, right now.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is a goal that I try to achieve on a regular basis.
Yeah,
being in the now. And because in that now, I believe we can savor that sacred moment, and we can really get the joy from it because of the sacredness of it. They go hand in hand.
Yeah, they do indeed. Yeah.
They do go hand in hand.
And there's a feast in every moment.
Oh, it's delicious. Delicioso. Peggy, I've known you for a few years, and I have known you to be that joy that you want to share with people. And you bring it to so many people in such a lively way. I've studied with you for so many years, over 20 years, and I've never heard you repeat, honestly, I have not heard you repeat in your classes, like there's not repetition. You always come up with something new, something that awakens me every time in a different way from a new perspective. You have enough material to write, an atlas of
well, that's a good idea.
Joy.
An atlas of joy.
Hey,
you can do all that material
from all those years. And I know you've been being recorded. Just transcribe it. Get somebody to transcribe it, because it has always amazed me. I will come to one of your classes or one of your workshops or sacred theater, whatever it is, and I'm there. And I'm always sitting there with my jaw dropped open, my eyes wide open, my heart wide open, because I'll say, where do you get it all? But you are bringing through you that which you are.
Oh, Mary
teaching.
Alice, thank you.
Oh, Peggy, but you are.
Thank you.
You really are. And I so admire you as my teacher for that.
Bless you for that.
And
I'm so grateful to you for this opportunity to spill on this great feasting on joy.
I am grateful because you're the first guest on my radio show. And I could not think of anyone who I would have enjoyed more speaking on such the topic, my favorite topic. I mean, what gift is this?
Oh, thank you.
Really, what to me, this is a great gift that you are here with me today to do this. And to be, we're sitting here right now. And to me, there's nothing else right now. Mm. It's now. And that is it. So I'm just so appreciative. And I'm interested to hear that you're taking a sabbatical.
I'm really determined to get this book into a shape where a wonderful editor can bring it to a renewed life. Mm-hmm. And that takes time. You know, it takes time.
Yes. Yes.
And there are a number of travels and things that are set up, but I'm slowing down. Sitting at the great table of joy, the long table of communion that is filled with joy, with every possible form of joy. And thank you for talking about the music so richly. And just imbibing, drinking it in.
Oh, yeah.
Wanting to share it.
Yes, yes, because it's what it's about. And I feel, if I can be so vain as to say, that I can carry on an extension of your work.
I'm so glad. You know, thank you for that.
It has come through me. You have really gotten me. You've taught me well.
And what a kind thing to say.
And I feel that I'm just able, like, to be an extension of that, an arm of extension, that I can carry forth some of it.
That's the idea, that we all, it is such a rich world. Each individual, absolutely the only one of its kind ever.
Isn't
ever, ever, ever. And so we all carry it with the way we carry it. I've always thought that's the essence of it. We add our own juice to it. Mm-hmm. And to all the, we're all, you know, what's a Buddhist thing? We all lean on each other. We're all part of each other. And yes, we've all learned. I mean, the people that made me up are by the millions, teachers and friends and allies like you. All of that make us all up every moment. But we're still individuals, and we add an individual luster to each teaching or anything. And we make it our own. We make it our own. And you know, you've taught me wondrous things about the heart. You've taught me wondrous things about laughter. And you're one of the funniest women in the world when you do your stand-up comedian pieces. A sort of hymn to joy in your capacity as a way of looking at the world that isn't cruel, but does make us laugh. Gives
Thank
us
you.
Joy to laugh at, you know, okay. to laugh with and to and for. Mm-hmm. And I love your goal of having more laughter in the world.
Oh.
Yes.
How can we live without it? Sometimes I find things funny that...
Not everybody does. Yes, I can understand that.
That was
a little
one
bit
of
that myself.
Yes, that's one of those things I had to learn to...
when the conflict arises... You have to say, oh,
yeah, to avoid
conflict.
I can choose
not
yes.
to reveal how deeply humorous
yes.
this yeah. pitiful situation is.
Yes. And then I'd be like, oh, darn, I hate to pass up a good line. I really hate to pass up a good line.
Oh, well, you have to save it for another time.
There'll but be there no are moment. Times it's just not appropriate.
Oh, dear, isn't that maddening?
Little Mary Alice has to just sit back for a while.
Hold the laughs, yes. Hold the laughs.
That is not the easiest thing to do.
No, it's not.
But I've learned. And then I forget, because one thing you have drilled into my head for many years and I'm not really good at is to rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. Of course, of you, the quintessential actress, rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. But most of my stuff, everything is so off the cuff. And a lot of times I don't even, it just comes out of my mouth and then I don't remember it 5 minutes later. Mm. And a friend of mine, a mutual friend of ours, Elaine Cirillo, she was here and she said to me, you need somebody to follow you around with a recorder so that when you come up with these lines, it's being recorded. And I'm like, oh yeah, who's going to do that? But And then I think I should maybe keep one, but I don't. Because I do. It just comes out of me. Uh-huh. It is not rehearsed.
The thing that's true, though, I believe, and I know it's true with you, that you don't have to do that. You don't have to record it because there's more where that came from.
Yes,
it will never, ever, that it is a boundless source.
Yes, that's true.
Of joyful observations and wise and witty observations about the life. Mm-hmm. And it's an endless source. You'll never get to the end of it. So you don't have to worry about I'm preaching to myself too here, that you don't have to worry about it being captured. Every bit of it being captured.
Right. Yeah, I didn't actually ever think about that. And yes, I've seen that of you being an endless source of that. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Remember.
See, now I've gotten a teaching today. Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you. I've had beautiful teachings myself and remind myself of the teachings that are available at every good moment.
Okay. One thing that I have loved is when I come onto your website, PeggyRubin.com. And one of the first things that I see is the quote from the Upanishads. From joy all beings have come. In joy all beings are sustained. To joy all beings return. This is the highest teaching. This is the highest teaching. Well, I really enjoyed that time with Peggy, and now we have a better understanding of how to discover our soul's message. So here are two of my favorite reviews of Peggy's book, To Be and How to Be. They give us insight as to what is in store for us as we delve into our own self-discovery. To Be and How to Be is designed for anyone willing to become a star in their own great play, and for people willing to reframe the way they see their lives. The effect of this award-winning book is an awakening of excitement, passion, commitment, and creativity. You discover the drama of your soul and the purpose of your life. It's very readable with exceptional exercises. To Be and How to Be presents an entirely fresh pathway to self-understanding. I hope you enjoyed Peggy's discourse today, and you can find more information about Peggy or purchase her book, To Be and How to Be, at PeggyRubin.com. Both part one and part two of our interviews with Peggy are available to hear, at your convenience, on GlobalHeartToHeart.com. Thank you again, and we look forward to hearing from Peggy toward the end of 2020 to hear an update about her book of joy. So stay tuned in to Global Heart to Heart Radio for upcoming interviews. One of our special guests will be Jean Houston. We hope you enjoy spending your days and evenings listening to our commercial-free music on Global Heart to Heart Radio.